This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you know you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, unlike the Owls, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So there's only one thing left to say, what's everybody having? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means you'll get some tasty rewards later on. And between you and me, if you order just before kick-off, you can get it just in time for half-time, but I've not told you that. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. See you later.
He has a shot, but it goes the other way.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Week.
A little bit older than you.
No, I'm not touching this topic. I'm not touching it.
Yeah.
Mediocre, mid-table, rabble.
So I just want to be able to talk as much crap.
If you play a night game, he has to turn the plug on his hand.
No one would have believed that he would keep his job for as long as he had. But...
the Wednesday Week! Hello, good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Week Owls Alumni Edition. Join us tonight is a man who is no stranger to playoff drama, ex-coach, ex-player, ex-schoolboy, absolutely knows the club, to coin a phrase. It's Mr. Nicky Weaver joining us tonight. Thanks a lot for joining us, Nick. You all right?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Listen, Nicky, like I say, I really appreciate your time, and I think you're going down in history in terms of this segment as being the most recent person to have left the club to then come on the show. So you're right up there. You're in the upper echelons of things that people want to talk about. I've got some questions of my own. I've got some questions from the from some of the Wednesday faithful as well, but I tell you what, let's go right back to the start. Let's go to schoolboy. Let's go to you growing up and your affinity with Sheffield Wednesday. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my dad was a Wednesday fan, and he started taking me and my brother when we were little. I think first game I went to was probably 85, I think. And yeah, so, you know, it was people like Gary Shelton, Gary Megson, Mel Sterland, Lee Chapman, Martin Hodge, that sort of team. And I was lucky, really, because, you know, obviously, if you wind on a few years to the early 90s, that's when things really got, you know, as good as it's been in sort of the recent history for the club.
You got indoctrinated early doors, didn't you? They teased you in. When you were a teenager, they were like, hey, we're rate good.
Yeah, now, you know, I went to Wembley in 91 when we won the League Cup final, and went the four times in 93. I've got a frame. My dad did me a frame of all the tickets from the four games in 93. So, yeah, amazing times following Wednesday. And, you know, to eventually play for the club was... you know, I used to stand on the cop and sit on the cop and, you know, just like thousands of kids will do now, and dream of playing for Sheffield Wednesday, and, you know, sort of lived out my dream. And, yeah, I never took it for granted. I loved every minute of, you know, supporting the club first as a kid. And, you know, some of your heroes, they sort of stick with you forever, really. And yeah, got some great memories both as a fan, as a player, and as a coach as well. So I've sort of... yeah, I suppose I've done it all, really, in terms of Wednesday, you know, apart from managing them. But yeah, so it's been a great journey, you know, with Wednesday, plenty of ups and downs. But yeah, you know, great memories, certainly.
I tell you what, you've had more roles at the club than Lee Bullen's played positions on the pitch, mate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so... well, I think he must have played 11 positions on the pitch. So yeah, he was a jack of all trades, Bully, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in preparation for this show, I was watching a really candid interview that you did. You were talking about leaving Sheffield Wednesday and going to Mansfield, and that kind of changed your career a little bit. Is that right to say?
Yeah, so I was a schoolboy at Sheffield Wednesday. It was the School of Excellence then. It wasn't the academy. And And yeah, I didn't, you know, I had a knee injury called Osgood Slatters, which a lot of teenage boys and girls get. It's a bit to do with growing pains. And yeah, they didn't, for whatever reason, you know, they didn't really fancy me. They didn't actually release me, but, you know, they really liked this other kid. And yeah, he used to play most of the games and I'd sort of come on for 5 minutes at the end. So I sort of knew my time was numbered there. So I do believe I would have got released when it came to signing YTS forms, it was then. And yeah, so I left and went to Mansfield Town. It was the best move ever made because for the first time in a long time, I really enjoyed my football. They sort of took a shine to me as well. And yeah, you know, really enjoyed my time at Mansfield. It's funny, really, because I made my debut for Mansfield as a first-year apprentice. And Sheffield Wednesday actually tried to buy me back. So it sort of let me go when I was 15. And then just after I made my debut, when I just turned 17, they actually tried to buy me back. Yeah, which I thought was funny. But it was different back then because, you know, there was no goalkeeping coaches or anything like that. So it was, you know, and I'd been injured for a long time. So I didn't, you know, sort of 14, 15, didn't play that much football. And yeah, so, you know, like I said, they didn't release me, but they certainly didn't stand in my way when I said I wanted to leave.
I'll tell you what, I've got to ask you, who was the other kid that they preferred over you? Can you remember his name? I know it's
a kid called John. Yeah, good lad, actually. A kid called Jonathan Woodward, and he signed an apprenticeship, and then I'm not sure where his career sort of took him after that, but yeah, it's just, you know, people's opinions, and, you know, I made a judgment call that I wanted to go to Mansfield, and, you know, obviously, it was a big wrench leaving Wednesday, supporting them and everything. We used to get free tickets back then as well, so I started having to buy me tickets after that. So yeah, but listen, I do believe it's the best move I ever made because, you know, I don't know what would have happened to me if I'd not gone to Mansfield.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So then you've had a couple of seasons at Mansfield. Didn't really break into the first team, but like you say, it was a career changer in terms of what. Like, did it change your attitude towards goalkeeping?
Not so much that. That I felt they appreciated me, where Wednesday I just felt I was just another body, if you like. So and obviously I did make my debut as a young player. I only played one game for them. And yeah, for some reason, I don't really know why, it was called the Pontins League, then the Reserve League, and we were in a really good league. So I remember playing at Villa Park, at Filbert Street, Leicester, and playing at Main Road against City. And it was one of the games I played against City that they first spotted me, so I played a reserve game against them. And then the week after, we played at Stockport, and I know they had people watching me then. And yeah, they sort of must have liked what they seen, and put a bid in and managed to thrash it out with Mansfield. And yeah, in April '97, I went to City. I couldn't believe it. Really, it was a little bit out of the blue. And yeah, it just sort of didn't happen at that time.
It's absolutely incredible because this is the bit for me where your career just skyrockets, and I don't know what happened. Did you grow a foot or something? Because you've gone from doing two seasons, one appearance for Mansfield, to all of a sudden being in the second division, playing for Manchester City, a mega club. I mean, all right, they were going through some tumultuous times at the time, and playing nearly every bloody game. Like, incredible, right?
Yeah, nothing changed. Listen, I always believed in myself. My dad, you know, was everyone's dad. He's the biggest fan, and he always believed in me. And yeah, so I didn't suddenly start performing any better. I just got the sort of opportunity to do that. And yeah, it was just the opportunity that Mansfield gave me. Then obviously I went to City. I had a year there, sort of in the reserves and just getting, you know, I was only 18 when I just turned 18 when I first went. So yeah, and then when I was 19, I started playing week in, week out. And yeah, it was an amazing time in, you know, in my football career, in my life as well, because suddenly I was on £37.50 a week at Mansfield. And then, you know, suddenly I go to Man City and there's all these superstars there. And yeah, started playing. And, you know, the first season ended up, I played 55 games and it ended up in the playoff final at Wembley against Gillingham, which was a remarkable day. And yeah, and then we went back to back, went up next season, then we got relegated, then we won the championship and went up again under Kevin Keegan. So yeah. So my first 4 years playing, you know, it was three promotions and a relegation. So although it, you know, times are different now and, you know, the club of Champions League and Premier League and all this and trebles and doubles and stuff, but it certainly wasn't boring then. And I think for the fans now of a certain age can really appreciate everything that they're seeing and witnessing every week, because it's not always been like that. So they've had to suffer, and especially with Man United sort of dominating in the 90s and the noughties and sort of, you know, sitting out. You know, they were the noisy neighbours at one time, weren't they? But, you know,
that's it.
Streets ahead of United now.
Funny that, isn't it, really? Like, the way that sort of you look at Man City then and Man City now, and you look at, like, Sheffield Wednesday then and Sheffield Wednesday now. It's like fans of a certain age, like my dad's, like, he remembers Sheffield Wednesday when they were absolutely up there. And now you think, really? Like, Premier League? Like, yeah. And it's like the opposite. Imagine being a, you know, a Man City fan. You never would have imagined that you'd be doing what you'd be doing now.
I always remember Joe Royle, the manager, said, you know, he played for City as well. And he said, listen, in the late 60s and 70s, we were a top team. He says, we were the best team in Manchester. And he said, what goes around comes around. And he said, Man City are coming round, and they've come round like you've never seen. And yeah,
it took him 25 years.
I think the thing is as well, the club, it's kept its soul. You know, it's lovely when you go over for match days and stuff and do various things for the club. And, you know, it's really humbling that how people sort of are with you and react to you and remember the past. It's not just all about the present. And, you know, little kids will come up to me and say, oh, my dad showed you your penalty save on YouTube and stuff. So even the kids know the history. And, you know, there's that much on Man City now, isn't there? I'm sure if you went on, you know, all the different outlets, you can find out anything about the club. So, yeah, it's remarkable, really, that, you know, the sort of ex-players sort of get looked after and that the fans sort of never forget. And, like I said, it is quite humbling.
I tell you what, let's just rewind a minute, and I want to get to Man City sticking by at some point, but let's talk about that. Just two things that you know, you mentioned earlier on about the players you played with at Man City. One of them obviously being Dickov, who was, you know, Paul Dickov was an underrated striker for me in terms of Premier League era. Like, he was one of the top boys at that point. But Lee Peacock was there as well, wasn't he, at that time with you at City, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's funny because they sold me. And the money they got for me, they bought Lee Peacock from Anfield. And then a few years later, or 18 months later or so, we signed Lee Peacock. To be fair, he didn't play many games. Then obviously he went on to Sheffield Wednesday and did great there, was part of the promotion team in 2005. So, it's amazing how that one sort of worked out. But, yeah, he came to City, Lee, and he didn't play many games, but he obviously did really well at Wednesday.
Tell you what, though, with the way Man City's gone, if I were Lee Peacock, it'd definitely be on my CV. I'd definitely be like, yeah, ex-Man City striker. I'd have that every time they interviewed me on Sky Sports, I'd make sure that was the bit that was written across the bottom of the screen.
I was going to say, he should have it tattooed on him, but I don't think he's got any room.
No, he's got no space for that, apart from his chin. So let's go back to that playoff final. So for those of you who don't know, I appreciate this is a Sheffield Wednesday-centric programme, but it's the playoff final. You're playing against Gillingham, which now, saying out loud, seems mental to say that Man City were playing against Gillingham in the League One playoff final. You're 2-0 down, and how long's left?
We went 1-0 down, I think, 81, and 2-0 down, 86.
Christ almighty. So there's 4 minutes left and the geezer's put the board up for 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, and I can still picture now Tony Pulis going mental on the bench. Because
Good.
He did not know where 5 minutes came from. I'll just digress actually slightly because that reminds me. So that's in 99. Obviously, Gillingham was so deflated after the game, it must have been untrue.
Yeah.
Wind on 23 years or whatever it is, Tony Pulis comes in at Sheffield Wednesday. So I'm sort of still got this image in my head of him, you know, going mental on the touchline at the fourth official, saying, how can there be 5 minutes extra time? Anyway, so he walked in the office on the first day, went round, looked at me, sort of blanked me, went round all the other staff, shook their hands, then come over to me, sort of looked me up and down, pointed at me, and he went, you can write off. And I'm thinking, I'm not really sure how this one's going to go. But to be fair, it was fine after that. And we had a laugh and a joke about it. The game, we're 2-0 down. Kevin Orlock scored what we all thought was a consolation in the 90th mm-hmm. minute. And then Paul Dickoff, I mean, he missed a few chances in the day. The goalkeeper for Gillingham was Vince Barger. It was Paul Dickoff's best man. And vice versa. So he'd made some good saves off Dickie. And Dickie probably scored his hardest chance of the afternoon in the 95th minute. And it went absolutely crazy. Amazing time in the game. And you know, Gillingham had taken their two centre-forwards off and put some defensive players on. So they had no... So went into extra time, they didn't have a striker on the pitch. an extra time sort of came and went, and nothing really happened in it. And then, you know, then it went to penalties, and yeah, I mean, a massive thing in the penalties was it was at the City End, and you know, for the Dillingham players, you know, the goal must have looked a little bit smaller, and I must have looked a little bit bigger. And fortunately, I saved the first one, and you know, then they missed. In fact, they took four penalties and only scored one. So luckily enough to save two. And I remember just saying to the linesman, you know, if I save this one, is that it? He went, yeah. I said, are you sure? He said, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I managed to save it and, you know, pull the face that I've never sort of pulled before or after.
Yeah, let's talk about that celebration, Weaves. Let's talk about the waving over and then the little run. You absolutely lost your bloody mind, didn't you?
Yeah, well, listen, I was 20 years of age. And I had this feeling running through my body, and I just didn't not know what to do. So I sort of waved the lads over. And then when they started getting towards me, I thought, I don't really want it to end. So I hopped over the advertising boards, around the gravel track, as you could at Wembley back then, and back onto the pitch. And yeah, it was only big Andy Morrison, the captain, who stopped me. and, you know, the next minute, so I'm out of breath, you know, gasping for air, and I've got a 20-man pile on, and you know, big Andy's on top of me, and you know, I remember, you know, get off your fat so and so sort of thing to him, and yeah, it was amazing, and you know, the fact we're still talking about it 25 years on, and for it to happen so early in my career, people always sort of remembered me for that moment, I suppose, and yeah, remarkable day, remarkable time, and yeah, one that I look back on with great fondness.
So. I'm not trying to skip past Man City because there's another couple of bits, but there's just, so you played then a couple of seasons for City, went up and down the leagues. And then if I remember, like, we all knew your name, right? There was a point where you were like the latest hot shit that was happening, you know, as a teenager in Yorkshire and, you know, you consume football and you want to know everything and you've got your sticker books and you're absolutely pulling away at every bit of information. We were all like, this geezer is going to be the next thing. And then at the risk of sounding dramatic, tragedy struck and you got a bit of a terrible injury that kept you out of the game for a significant amount of time, didn't it?
Yeah. So I was, you know, I'd never forget it. It was March the 5th, 2002. We played at St Andrews. Just turned 23. And I dived to my left and I just felt something in my knee. Anyway, cut long story short, I tore my cartilage, which is not the biggest injury in the world. I had a couple of operations, couldn't sort it out. So I went to America. I was lucky enough I was at City and they could afford to send me to America. And yeah, I ended up having four surgeries over there. But one of them, the third surgery I had over there, was a meniscal transplant. So I was the first British footballer ever to have that done. I was really lucky in terms of, unlucky to get injured, but lucky I was at City. Lucky that I had this transplant and it worked, because at one bit, at sort of 24, I thought I was going to have to pack in. And I was lucky that I'd just signed a new five-year deal, you know, a few months before getting injured. So I did have time on my side and yeah, so I was really lucky to, I mean, I was out in total. I mean, I kept making comebacks and, you know, breaking down again. So, but yeah, that went on for like 2.5, nearly 3 years. And, you know, I think there was only sort of me that believed I was ever going to get back playing, because sort of, I think the club had almost written me off at the time. And I just lived in the physio room and the gym for sort of 3 years. But, you know, I had a determination. I stopped drinking. I didn't have a drink for a year. After my big operation, because I thought I need to do everything I possibly can to get back fit. And if I don't get back fit and have to retire, then I can have no regrets. And so I give it absolutely everything I had, and unfortunately got back and, you know, played on for another 10 years.
Because in the middle of that rehab was your loan spell, your first spell with the club, wasn't it, with Wednesday?
Yeah, so I came in November 2005. So I sort of got back fully fit at this point, but... So the goalkeeper, David Seaman, signed that summer for City. So I was sort of sitting on the bench a little bit. We had another Belgian lad called Gert de Vlieger. So I just remember walking in from training one day. Stuart Pearce was the manager. And as I'm getting in my car, he's hung out of his office window saying, Waves, Waves. Shout back up. So I went into his office. He says, how do you fancy playing for Sheffield Wednesday tomorrow? I'm like, wow. So this is sort of like 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. We're playing Derby at Hillsborough the next day. So I'm like, wowzers. Yeah, obviously, definitely, yeah. So I spoke to Paul Sturrock in Stuart Pearce's office. He's like, listen, we want you to come. You're going to play tomorrow. Be a big game, 30,000 at Hillsborough against Derby County. So I shot down to the Etihad, or Eastlands as it was then, and signed all the forms. I come back over that evening, stepped at mum and dad's, and I turned up at 1:30, met the lads, and played. So I didn't
get straight in the stick.
Yeah, and I just remember thinking, you know, I knew a few of the lads, don't get me wrong. I used to live with Glenn Whelan in Manchester. Mm-hmm. He lived in my digs with me when it first came over from Ireland. But he was sort of the only player I knew. Obviously, Lee Peacock as well, sorry. And yeah, it was, I was sort of thrown in the deep end. But yeah, we beat Derby 2-1. And, you know, I got man of the match. I got presented with some cufflinks, which I've still got. And yeah, after that game, it was, you know, one of the proudest moments of my career, because I'd, you know, the day before, I didn't even know anything about it. And then suddenly I played for Sheffield Wednesday, you know, and, you know, I made a couple of decent saves in front of the cop. And that's the thing you dream of doing when you're a kid. So, yeah, I'll never, ever forget that debut. And Paul Sturrock was the manager. Really enjoyed, you know, playing for Paul. He was a real good manager. Obviously, very successful, not just at Wednesday, but other clubs as well. So, yeah, something, you know, I came for 3 months. David Lucas was injured. And, yeah, I played 14 games. And it was... an amazing sort of childhood dream, I suppose, really, to play for Wednesday. And yeah, it was brilliant for my family and all my friends, because all, you know, most of them are Wednesday fans. And yeah, just something that it was a bucket list thing ticked off. And, you know, not many players are lucky enough to play for the hometown club, but I was. And even when I left, I got called back. One of the goalkeepers got injured, so I got called back to City. And I always had a feeling that, you know, there might be something else with Sheffield Wednesday down the line. And you know, a few years later, obviously, I came back again.
There must have been a really good feeling of that kind of, you'd gone from sort of feeling like they might release you and things weren't going your way all them years before, to then kind of doing what you'd done with City, so then almost kind of come full circle back. There must have been a really great feeling to kind of walk back into that space, having done what you've done and like overcome what you had.
Yeah, 'cause, I mean, I sort of knew the club inside out, I suppose, because I'd obviously been there as a kid as well. And yeah, just to come and play. And, you know, if I'd have played one game for Sheffield Wednesday, I'd have sort of settled for that. But yeah, to play them 14 games. And I've still got... So that was in the Championship. We were struggling. But we had a good little run over Christmas. And I think we won 3 on the spin. And then I went back to City. Then when Sheffield Wednesday got safe, Paul Sturrock wrote me a letter, just saying, thanks for your contribution, much appreciated. And, you know, we've got Championship survival and you were part of that. So thank you very much, which I thought was brilliant. And
wow. Does that happen a lot? Is that like par for the course, or Paul Sturrock was like?
I think that's what Paul Sturrock was like. He was a proper gentleman, you know, big character. And yeah, I just thought, what a lovely touch to receive a letter from, you know, I'd send me goodbyes at Wednesday, played me games. It was good for Wednesday. It was good for me. You know, loans generally work both ways if it works out. And yeah, so, and then, so I got the letter, and yeah, I've still got the letter. But the good thing for me is I'd obviously been injured for a long time. So that those 14 games got me back sort of match sharp, and I started playing the following season. So
that's yeah. Right. Yeah. So you got back in the sticks at City, didn't you? So I'm just looking at the stats now. I've got 26 appearances here. Is that around the time they then signed David James or something like that? Is that around that period?
So when I came back, it weren't David Simon. David James at the club when I came on loan. Yeah. So it was one of them, because David James was that good. You know, he was playing for England. It was such a talented guy. I knew I was never going to dislodge JMO at City. And if David James is at your club, he's going to play. So simple. And
he's going to play up front and all, apparently. He's going to play striker and all at some games.
Absolutely, yeah. So I knew I was never going to dislodge JMO. So, but obviously, sitting on the bench for City, we were sort of mid-table-ish in the Premier League. It's still, you know, I'm not saying I was happy not to be playing, but I was happy to be part of it. And where I'd been injury-wise, I was sort of, you know, happy to be in and around it. And it was when they sold David James to Portsmouth. They brought Joe Hart in, who was 18 at the time, and they brought a Swedish lad in called Andreas Isaacson, Swedish international. Mm. They brought Andreas in to replace David James, really, and he was going to start in 2006-07 season. He was going to start against Chelsea first game of the season, and he got injured. He got injured the day before the game, so Stuart Pearce turned around and said, you're playing tomorrow at Stamford Bridge. And yeah, I think I played the first, including Cup game, I think I played the first 31 games that year. So, which was, you know, from where I'd been injury-wise, to come back and play in the Premier League. And, you know, we had a really good start to that season as well. It went a little bit sour towards the end, and Stuart Pearce ended up losing his job that summer. But, yeah, I feel, for me personally, that was my biggest achievement in football, to get back and play at that level when, you know, most people had written me off.
Amazing. Now, in this show, I have a myriad, you know, got about 8 presenters, a myriad of ages, and I've just done all the stuff that made me fangirl from when I, you know, in my late teens, early 20s. Chaz, I don't mean this disrespectfully. In terms of your age, have you caught up with where we are now?
Like, yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, I was actually saying this when they said that you were coming on. I was like, excellent. Somebody I've actually seen play football, and it's not a charity match, and it's not like a blast from the past, an actual footballer who I got to sit on the cop and actually see play. You mentioned names of people. Like, I remember that. I was alive in 2005.
I understood that reference.
I got that reference. So, yeah, I've caught up. I'm with you. I'm there. So, yeah, I'll no longer zone out.
I'm sat here fangirling. So before, you know, I assume the contract ended at City, went into Charlton, had a decent amount of appearances there. At this point during City, just to rewind just a small period, did you feel like the injury hampered your international prospects?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, I'm a 10 caps at under-21s, and everyone was saying, you know, I'm going to play for England and this and that. But, you know, for whatever reason, it wasn't to be. A lot of it was down to the injury, and I was never really the same again. You know, I never felt I was as, my movement was as free and after my injury. So, yeah, listen, I'd have loved to have played for England. Everybody would, but I think I nearly, you know, Kevin Keegan said he nearly took me to Euro 2000, but ultimately he didn't. And yeah, there was a couple of other times where it was, you know, rumoured that I was going to get in a squad here and there, but I never did. And you know, never played for England. But listen, it'd have been a fantastic achievement, and it'd have been, you know, the proudest moment any footballer can have, really, representing your country. But it wasn't to be, and you know, I've got no regrets at all. You know, I probably didn't play at a high enough level consistently for long enough to sort of get in that England squad. So
David Seaman had that shirt sewn up for about 10-15 years.
Yeah,
he just won't retire.
Yeah, but like. So it was like David Seaman, Nigel Martin and Tim Flowers for years. And then, you know, I was in the under-21s with Paul Robinson. And then Robbo went on to make probably 40-odd England caps. And, you know, so, you know, I wasn't a million miles off at some point, but ultimately it never happened. And I've got no sour grapes. So, you know, I don't never really feel that is, you know, I mean, obviously it would have been lovely, but I never really felt it was probably warranted. You know, like I said, I didn't play consistently enough for long enough at the top level, so no complaints there. But obviously it would have been nice, but yeah, it was more what other people said, you know, in, you know, the papers and stuff than what I said.
Fair enough. So a couple of seasons down at Charlton, then went up and did a season in Scotland. But the bit I want to pick out just before we get to Sheffield Wednesday, what happened at Burnley? What happened there? Did you get to play for him?
Well, I left Charlton and I could have signed for Preston. Alan Irvine was manager of Preston, and Andy Rhodes was the goalkeeping coach, who I knew. Didn't really fancy it at Preston because I didn't think I was going to play. And then got a phone call off Craig Levine, the Dundee United manager. And he said, do you fancy going up here? I said, no, not really. I just weren't having it at all. And a lad who was to play at City with called Willow Flood, he was there. He kept ringing me up saying, oh, you know. Anyway, Craig Levine said, listen, it's 6-month contract. You'll play every game. We've signed a goalkeeper, a Slovakian lad called Dusan Pernis. A very familiar name, I'm sure. And they signed him, but he couldn't come till January. So he said, just come up and play it. And you know what? I thought, I'm going to do that. So I went up and I loved it. Absolutely loved it at Tannadice. And I played all the games up until Christmas. Then I come out of contract and I went to Middlesbrough. I nearly signed for Middlesbrough. And I was actually at Middlesbrough for a couple of days, and I got a phone call off Brian Laws saying, and I knew the goalkeeping coach Billy Mercer, who Brian Laws had taken with him from Wednesday. He was the goalkeeping coach when I was on loan at Wednesday, so I knew Billy. And yeah, so he said, do you want to come and sign for Burnley? Burnley were in the Premier League at the time. So I said, yes. So I got straight in my car, left Middlesbrough, and signed for Burnley. But I sort
that's
of
the
went
one
in...
where Brian Laws had just left us and kind of fell upwards a little bit, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah,
weren't going great for him at his time, and then ended up getting a Premier League gig. I think they were nigh on dead and buried, though, Burnley, at
no,
the time.
No, they weren't. Because,
were they not?
No, Owen Coyle had done so well. Then he left to go to Bolton, and they were sort of like 13th or 14th at Christmas, and then sort of spiralled downhill from there. So I went there pretty much as number two to Brian Jensen. And, you know, I thought I was going to get a few games, but ultimately I didn't. Brian Laws actually said to me after the season, he said, I wish I'd have played you in this particular game, but it didn't. And it was interesting because, so that summer I got a phone call off Andy Rhodes, the goalkeeper coach at Wednesday at this point now with Alan Irvine. And he said, we believe you've left Burnley. We want you to come to Wednesday. Grant is going to Burnley. So Burnley had bid for Lee Grant. So I'm sort of, I was based in London at the time, so I'm sat in London, I'm thinking, you know, speaking to Rhodesy every couple of days, and I'm saying, what's happening? He said, oh, we can't sort of deal out with Granty. And so it seemed to take weeks and weeks for Lee Grant's move to Burnley to go through. And when it went through, I went and signed for Wednesday, so we sort of swapped. And I couldn't believe it because, you know, I was out of contract. I had a few things on the table, but once Andy Rhodes had rung me and I knew there was a chance of coming to Wednesday, I jumped at the chance. And my daughter was 6 weeks old at the time. I was desperate, you know, to not to move back to Sheffield, but desperate to come to Wednesday. And obviously, moving back to Sheffield was an added bonus. So, yeah, it just all fell into place perfectly. And I only signed a one-year deal, and I could have, I had better offers on the table elsewhere, but I just wanted to play for Wednesday. And I was trying to push for a two-year deal, but they'd only give me 1 year, and which was the best thing, actually, because, you know, I got off to a decent start at Wednesday. And after about six, 4 or 5 months, I signed a new two-and-a-half-year deal. So it sort of worked out well. So, yeah, so obviously playing for Wednesday in that first spell was great. But then when I signed for the club permanent was absolutely brilliant. And I literally signed on the Thursday before the season started. And I barely trained and I'd not played a game for a long time. And went into the first game of the season and we won 2-0. Yeah, so great. And we had a really good start to that season. Had some really good players.
Was that Dagenham and Redbridge, that one? Was that the first game of the season? Is that what that was?
The mighty Dagenham and Redbridge.
So,
yeah. So, and again, buzzing to make my second debut, obviously keeping a clean sheet, winning the game. It's fantastic. Then we played Bury in the week. We won 2-0. We're speaking off air before. Liam Palmer made his debut in that game. And Giles Coke had scored on the Saturday. He scored on the Tuesday. We're off to a really, really good start. And then for whatever reason, it just sort of, we sort of let Alan Irvine down, really. The performance has dipped and, because in all my managers I played for, he was up there with my favourite managers, Alan. I thought he was brilliant. Really good guy, really humble guy, really good coach, tactically really good. And yeah, we sort of let him down, and ultimately it cost him his job.
Jesus, it was an odd time you played for the club around there, because you'd just come out of an embargo. I believe that was what the hold up was for your transfer, and then. All these characters just came in. You know, on one hand, we had like play during the time you were there full time. We had like Clinton Morrison, Neil Mellor, Alan Irvine. Everybody who we've had on has spoke about him like he's genuinely one of the best coaches they've ever played for. I mean, there must have been some big personalities at the club there because it was absolutely insane. Because on one hand, you've got JJ, for example, who he's just so laid back, he's horizontal. Lightning quick would beat six men, and then we all remember that shot he had at Charlton. You know what I mean? Where he absolutely skydived to row double Z. And then on the other hand, you've got Neil Mellor, who is a lethal striker. You've got Danny Jones, Mickey Gray, all these people knocking around. And it became like a weird little gang that you kind of had at the club at that time, right?
Yeah, we'd signed a lot of players that summer. Like I said, Daniel Jones, Giles Coke, Chris Sedgwick, Neil Mellor, Paul Heffernan, Clinton. I remember Clinton. So when I come in, Clinton had just signed and he's giving it, you know, like Clinton does. Oh, you know me, Weaves, I've scored plenty of passes over the years. It's, I guarantee I'm going to get 30 league goals this year. I think he got about 7. but yeah, Clinton was, I like Clinton. Got a lot of time for Clinton. Good guy. Obviously, his best days were behind him at that point, as a lot of us were, and that was perhaps one of the issues when you think about it, where a lot of players, so you know, 31, 32 sort of age, probably just past the peak.
As a result of that, though, Nicky, like you know, we did have these. You had, like I say, you had Mickey Gray, you had Clinton, you had yourself all at the wrong side of 30, for lack of a better term. But as a result, what came through were players like Tommy Spur, Liam Palmer, Mark Beavers. It gave them an opportunity to get, you know, the exuberance of youth to carry the old fellas across, as it were, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did have a good mix. Obviously, Beavers was he was a regular, he was a real good player. Tommy Spur did fantastic for the club, played loads and loads of games, and Liam Palmer was just sort of breaking in. So we did have that right blend. And it's really difficult to sort of pinpoint what sort of went wrong for Alan Irvine, because all the lads loved him. They loved his training. We got off to a great start, and then for some reason we just started misfiring, and it just didn't happen, and you know, we were losing games that we should have won, and so it was so frustrating because we all wanted to do so well, and you know, I wanted obviously to do well and be playing back in the Championship with Wednesday, but you know, it wasn't to be for Alan, and ultimately he paid the price and lost his job in probably around the January, end of January time, and Gary Megson came in. So you know, and I really like Gary as well. You know, a lot of people, it was quite hot-headed, Gary, and you know, it wouldn't mince his words. He'd tell you what he thought and could be quite animated in the dressing room sort of before the game at half-time and after the game. But I liked him and yeah, you know, ultimately he did quite well as well. And then I think, he must have, whatever happened with him, he left the club as well. So, yeah, so, you know, it certainly wasn't boring. We had lots of different managers but Alan Irvine, yeah, certainly a great, great guy. And like I said, Gary Megson as well. And his last game, I think, was the Derby win against Sheffield United, wasn't it?
It was. He had a bit of a couple of shitty results running up to that derby, and then to get sacked after winning a derby is absolutely insane. Charlie, I feel like I've dominated the early years. Is there anything you'd like to add? My apologies.
I was wondering, like you sort of mentioned, we've talked about you having grown up as a Wednesday fan, like your dad being a Wednesday fan. Is it harder to play for your team, like, or do you think, like, because obviously there's a benefit to knowing how they feel, as in actually literally them right there in the cop, but do you feel like there's a bit more, because I feel like sometimes we're harder on like the likes of Palmer and Dawson and that, almost like the fact that they are one of our own almost feels like, oh well, that's no excuse kind of thing, like.
The difficulty, listen, it's brilliant playing for your hometown club. It really is. It's like, it's a, you know, something that you've dreamed of as a kid. So very lucky in the way, in respect to doing that. But it's difficult as well, because if you make a mistake or have a bad game or go on a bad run, you know, you go and see your mates and they're like, oh, what happened on Saturday? Or, you know, if I played for City or Charlton or whoever, no one were really bothered. Mm. So none of my mates, for example, are Charlton fans. So I could go home or my mates would come down to London or whatever and no one was really bothered. But when you're playing for your hometown club, it's everybody knows, like go to mum and dad's and, you know, next door neighbour would pop up, oh, what happened on Saturday? you can't get away from it. So it can be difficult. So I do understand for players like Cammy and Palms that it can be difficult. And it's brilliant, but also difficult, because I just think that you just can't get away. Everywhere you turn, there's a Wednesday fan, and you know, you go for a Sunday dinner in the local pub and, you know, people are going, what happened yesterday? And, oh, what about, what's happening next Tuesday? Is he fit? Or, and you just don't really get away from it. If you move away and play for a club that's not close to your heart, you still give everything you've got for the club. Of course you do, but you don't have that. You feel like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
We all know away days are mint, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. Same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now with the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. For more information, see mcdonalds.com. See you later.
There is a bit of escapism, if you like.
Yeah, I suppose the high...
Sorry, Charlie. I'm just going to tell you, just on the back of what he was saying, it's weird you said that. He asked for some questions off the website formerly known as Twitter, and one of them did say, asking where he goes out for a beer nowadays. That's from that's from 1007. So, you know what I mean? So based on what he was saying, I guess you might not, you know, there's parts of Sheffield where you still don't have to put your hand in a pocket for a beer. Like, you know what I mean? Sorry, Charles.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'll pop down to the local pub, or, you know, probably Saturday afternoon, I'll probably pop down to the cricket club and watch the local team play cricket and have a few beers there. But certainly sort of, you know, going downtown and sort of larging it up like, you know, you do when you're younger. You know, I'm a 45-year-old man now, two kids. So every now and then we'll sort of venture out into town or something. But, yeah, very rarely. And, yeah, it's just, you know, a few social pints on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon. And, you know, it's sort of nice to sort of, I really enjoy, you know, going out for a couple of pints at tea time, watching new football results come in. And, you know, because that's something I've never done, because you've been involved in it all your life. So just doing what, you know, what everyone else does and what your mates do, it's, you know, I enjoy that side of it as well. Once you come away from the game, if I put a little bit of weight on it, it don't bother anyone other than me. But when you're playing, you've got to live your life. You've got to eat right. You've got to look after yourself. You've got to get in bed at the right times. And you've got to be at it every day in training and every game. So yeah, when you do come away from the game, it's you can relax. If you want to go out for, I don't know, a couple of pints of a curry, it's sort of no problem. Where when you're playing, it's, you know, you've got to really watch what you're doing.
That's definitely something that's changed so much now. I was reading Alex Miller's book about the 1990-91 season, and it was like, and then they went for a pint or 10, and then shortly before the big game they went for 17 pints. You just think, it's especially like at that, like the top level now, I mean they're micromanaged, aren't they? Like they've got stool analysts and all sorts. Oh, like they're absolutely not allowed to go for 17 pints now.
And I saw the crossover when I first started. Lads would go out for a drink, and you know, it was a big drinking, you know, certainly in the early 80s, middle 90s. Then the money started coming into the game, and, you know, people like Arsene Wenger, you know, Arsenal were notorious for sort of having a good time and socialising together. And so things just gradually changed. More money came into the game, and everything got more professional. So I sort of saw both sides of it. So yeah, listen, I mean, there were no sort of camera phones then. There were no social media. So if lads wanted to go out for a drink, it was no problem. But now it's, you know, if you're playing the Premier League, it's something that you can't really do, and you've got to be really careful where you go and who you sort of mix with.
Yeah, having run a few bars in my time, most recently, you get a lot of footballers ringing up now, and they always want a private area. They always want a private area where it's away. But the worst thing is, they don't pay. Like McAllister, who plays for Liverpool now, came out in Brighton. Ordered £2,000 with the booze for him and his entourage, him and the lads, and him and Lewis Dunk still owe me £2,000. So if you're watching, boys, I'll take a check. So let's move it up to let's move it up to more recent years. So fell out of favour to Chris Kirkland, then did a stint in Aberdeen. Is that right?
Yeah. So I had 3 years at Wednesday, but last year, you know, I struggled with injury a little bit. I broke my hand, had operation on my hand. And, you know, Dave Jones brought Chris Kirkland in, who was a good lad. And obviously, Kirky played, you know, really well for Wednesday. And, you know, Stephen Bywater was still there at the time as well. So I was out of favour. I nearly signed for Doncaster. Dean Saunders came in for me, but couldn't quite get the deal over the line. And, so I fell out of favour under Dave Jones. And, again, that's just, you know, I had no issue with it, really. It's how it is. And then, yeah, so I left Wednesday at the end of that season, which would have been in 2013. And then not much happened over the summer for me, really, because I'd not played for sort of a year. And then I got a phone call out of the blue from Derek McInnes, the Aberdeen manager. And he sort of said, do you want to come up here? And again, I said, not really. It's, you know, I'd just had my second kid at this point. So my lad, it was about 6 months old. So I've got a daughter at sort of 2.5, a lad at 6 months old. And I'm just thinking, I just can't do it. And then he sort of said to me, what about if you only come up for the back end of the week? So I said, what do you mean? He said, well, travel up on a Wednesday, train Thursday, Friday, game Saturday. And I started to get a little bit more interested then. So he said, would you be able to train at Sheffield Wednesday on a Monday and Tuesday? So I spoke to Andy Rhodes, the goalie coach, who spoke to Dave Jones. And, you know, so what I did, I signed for Aberdeen for a year, but I used to train at Wednesday on a Monday and Tuesday and travel up to Scotland on a Wednesday. So yeah, it worked really. I didn't play many games at Aberdeen. The other goalkeeper, Jamie Langfield, did really well. And so he sort of kept me out all season. But we finished second. I think in the league, and because the Rangers weren't in the league at that point, and we won the Scottish League Cup.
Yeah, won the League Cup.
Yeah, so
others are stacking up leaves.
Yeah, so you know, to finish my career up at Aberdeen, I sort of knew, because of going back to my injury before, I'd got injured again at Wednesday. I had to go back over the States, have another operation, and I was really struggling after that. And I sort of, the last sort of 18 months, 2 years of my career, I sort of just sort of hobbled through really. And I probably should have finished looking back when I left Wednesday, but I got the opportunity to go to Aberdeen, really enjoyed it, glad I did. And then, yeah, and then it came to an end at Aberdeen. I got a phone call off Andy Rhodes just saying, do you fancy the academy job? Because Mark Crosley had got it and he'd left. He went to take the Barnsley job. And obviously, I knew everyone at the club. Dean Ramsdale was the academy manager, and Rammers was sort of saying, want you to do it. And Rhodes, he said, I didn't really want to go into coaching, if I'm honest. I just couldn't see myself doing it. And then, ultimately, I went as a coach. I didn't have any coaching badges or any coaching experience. I never really took much interest in it, but, you know, ended up doing 10 years there. So, yeah, not best thing I ever did, but up there, one of the best things I ever did, because I genuinely didn't know what I wanted to do. So, yeah, brilliant to go back as a coach, and I still knew everybody there. So really, from signing permanently in 2010, I had a year at Aberdeen, but I still used to come in every week. So it never really felt like I'd left the club.
So working for Andy for about, 4 years, and then he moved on himself, and you getting the top job, his role, essentially. Like, that must have been a hell of a full circle for you to get. I mean, that, you know, did you feel like, because I, you know, there's times when you get imposter syndrome in your life in some jobs that you've got. Did you get that, or did you go, yeah, I've earned this? This is my gig now.
Again, I was always probably, I never really seek the job. I never thought that's what I want to do. The opportunity came up. I got a phone call off Jos Lehoucaj, the manager, and he said, listen, Andy's obviously leave. In fact, Rhodesy rung me first to tell me, then Jos rung me and said, we'd like you to take the job. So I said, and again, I weren't desperate to do it, because it's very time consuming, and with the academy, it's a lot more relaxed, and it's not as much pressure. It's not all about result. It's more about a longer process. But I just thought it's an opportunity I can't really turn down, and I didn't really want anyone else to have the job. So yeah, I did it, and so Jos obviously went, and again, I know the fans weren't particularly fond of Jos, but what a lovely, lovely man, and absolutely.
Yeah, let's. I tell you what it is. I want to come away from the timeline a bit now, because obviously you've got a decade now of some mega ups and some mega downs with the club over the last 10 years. So I'm just going to fire some questions at you now about that, and I want to start with Lehoucaj, with Jos, because, you know, he, not the most animated of geezers, and you know, football fans tend to prefer that, you know, a Megson type on the sideline screaming and shouting and all the rest of it. But did he have there must have been something there for him to get the role in the first place, and for the success that he had. Was it Stuttgart that he was at before?
Yeah, it was obviously in Germany, and he'd got a few promotions, hadn't he, to the top division in Bundesliga. So, yeah, so it was a lovely fella. It just didn't work out for him at Wednesday. And, you know, the fans obviously didn't take to him because he was very quiet. He'd sort of, he wouldn't be stood on his technical area dishing orders out. He'd sort of be sat down. But it was the nicest man you could ever wish to meet. And I felt for Jos, because when you're on the inside of it and you see what a lovely man he is and how hard he's working, and all, you know, and for whatever reason, it just sometimes doesn't work out for a manager. I felt really bad for Jos. But obviously he lost his job. So I think I worked with Jos for about 6 months. And then Steve Bruce came in, and Bruce was brilliant. I loved working for Steve. He obviously wasn't there for long. It looked like he'd turned we got the team going and we were winning games and had a little bit of a charge towards the end of the season. And yeah, it looked like, you know, things were going to, you know, get a lot better. And then obviously he left, you know, with Stephen Clements and Steve Agnew in the summer. So yeah, we'd just been to Portugal. We had 10 days in Portugal, pre-season training, and then the day we come back, the rumours were sort of circulating that Newcastle are coming for him, and obviously he felt it was something that he couldn't turn down, and yeah, so he went, and you know, yeah, so Lee Bullen took the reins then. So yeah, it was a big loss losing Brucey.
Yeah, I think that's what was so bitter about the most. It's because there looked like there was genuine improvement in terms of how, you know, Bruce looked like he'd got us it got a tune out of us a little bit. We were kind of excited about getting the season starting, and it just kind of threw it all into disarray a little bit, which I think really frustrating. Sorry, Charlie, again, is there anything you... We're going to fire questions at you now about the last 10 years, so don't worry about the timeline. Get right in on it.
No, it's just, it's interesting you say about like with Joss, because we don't see a lot of that, but equally, like, managers are kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't, aren't they? Because if you're a big character, but it doesn't kind of show on the pitch, that doesn't work, and you know, the proof's in the pudding. But at the end of the day, I guess, like, once the game's kicked off and everything, the manager's just there and it's all kind of happening away from him. Do you think we are quite unforgiving as fans? Like, do you think we don't give people a chance because we're a bit used to being maybe let down a bit and we're disappointed? Do you think we're quite quick to judge?
I think you've got a right to judge, but ultimately, as a manager, you've got to win football matches. And you know, if you're winning every week, it don't matter if your manager doesn't turn up to the game. You know, it's when you're not winning. I always remember with England when, you know, Sven-Göran Eriksson took over from Kevin Keegan. Kevin was very animated, very passionate, and Sven looked like, you know, like an old professor, didn't he? And it would have had that passion inside, I've got no doubt. And Joss had that passion inside, but some people have a different way of showing it. I mean, we look at like Arteta and Guardiola now, and Klopp, they're really animated. And that's what fans want to see. And it doesn't mean that other people don't care any more or any less. It's just a different way of people putting their emotions over and the feelings across. So, yeah, but I think fans want to see some passion. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a set of fans take to a manager like they took to Danny Rowe, because he's energetic, he's passionate, he's young, he's enthusiastic, and that's what the fans want to see. And like I said, I don't think I've ever seen any manager I've ever worked for, a fan base, take to someone so quickly.
Yeah. It was genuinely impressive. And we'll get to Danny Rowe in a bit, but I there's probably
a light on because I think
looks like you're giving some kind of evidence in some kind of documentary, doesn't it, at the minute? But I tell you what, so there's going to be a point where some of the listeners of this show and some of the things I've said over the years, where they're probably saying to me, ask him about Cameron Dawson. So I'm going to now. So there was a period where Mark Crossley was at the club. And we had him on the show, and he spoke about Cam, and he spoke about Joe, and there was a point where he had to make a choice to keep one, and he said, no, I'm not doing it. So the club kept them both on, and it was Joe who got the nod above Cammy for a while, and then they kind of switched at some point. Dawson's, you know, Cam's seen off a number of people that have come into the club to take his shirt off him, and somehow he's always got it back. I said somehow, he's done it through hard work and graft, don't get me wrong. Is he quite strong-willed? Is he a big character? Because he's had some knockbacks. I mean, that period prior to him going to Exeter and the season he came back when we went down, I mean, that game against Brentford just before COVID, God, he had a torrid time of it. So, you know, Does he learn? I mean, tell me about him, because there's part of Wednesday fans swelling up now that are sort of saying that Cam might need to move on in order for his career to flourish. And I'll be honest, I feel I'm in that camp a little bit myself, because I feel like under a different guy, is under a different regime, he does have the makings of a good goalkeeper there, but I feel like there might be some bits he needs to learn a little bit.
Yeah, listen, you know, I've known Cammy since he was 16. And Cammy's done brilliant, you know. Is a good lad, works hard. He's played a lot of games now for Wednesday, over a long period of time, and he's been in the team and out of the team, and in the team and out, like he were this season and last season. And again, it's going back to the one I was talking about, your hometown club. It's really difficult, and obviously, you know, when Joss came and decided not to play Kieran Westwood, that was. You know, obviously, West had done great and was a fan's favourite. And so that was a difficult time for Cam because, I mean, ultimately, the fans wanted to see Kieran Westwood there, but Joss decided to play Cam. So I always thought Cam got, you know, a little bit of a hard bargain with the fans because, you know, they wanted to see Westwood. And I remember Cam playing and, you know, the fans were chanting West's name, and which they've got a right to. But then it doesn't help Cam because it puts Cam under more pressure. And, you know, Cam lets a goal in and everyone's saying, oh, Cam Dawson should have done better. But listen, I like Cam, 6'5", he'll make big saves, he can kick off both feet, a good talker, really good in the dressing room. And yeah, it's just been a difficult time for Cam. And yeah, who knows what will happen this summer. But I can't speak highly enough of Cam and Joe as well. You know, I know them both from Joe Wells. We've known both from a young age. And Joe was sort of in front of Cammy earlier on. And then Cammy got in front of Joe. And it was really interesting to see how the two of them grouped together at Wednesday and how long they stayed there together. And ultimately, Joe moved on to Derby and has done really well there. So they've just got promoted. So, yeah, so, you know, I do feel that Cammy's had a rough ride. But, you know, when I was up with the first team, I'd only got positive things to say about Cammy. It was great to coach, great to work with every day. And yeah, so for me, you know, I'd like to see Cammy stay at Wednesday, but I understand that decisions have to be made, and whether that's the club's decision or the player's decision, only time will tell on that one. But yeah, I can't speak highly enough of Cam and Joe.
Because it seems like every time a new gaffer comes in, they're looking for a replacement for Cameron Dawson, and then it normally takes about 6 months and Cameron Dawson's back in the sticks. You know what I mean? It must be difficult to be that guy to just keep going, all right, who's coming in next? Is it Peacock Farrell, Devis Vasquez? Is it, you know what I mean?
It must be difficult for Cam, and, you know, I've been close with Cam for many years, and, you know, I've sat down and had lots of chats with him, and as a goalkeeper, you've just got to be patient, and when you get your chance, you've got to take it, and managers come in and have opinions, and sometimes they want to bring their own men in, and yeah, so it is difficult. The life of a goalkeeper is not easy.
No, it's a thankless task, I guess, isn't it? Because it's not like being a striker or being a midfielder, where as long as you're perhaps the one of the top three in favour midfielders, you're all right. You're either in or you're out, and you keepers sometimes get subbed, do they?
Yeah, once you're not playing as well and you are on the bench, you pretty much know you're not going to come on. And yeah, it becomes really difficult and it gets frustrating, but then you've got to be ready, because when you get a chance, you've got to take it. And, you know, he's probably got the best penalty record of any Wednesday keeper in history.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And I suppose it makes you stronger as well. Like, there must be like they talk about like goalkeepers union and that, but there must be an understanding between keepers that, like, rather than it being like an horrible rivalry, understand it. You know that if it's not you, it's them, and vice versa. So it must mean you have to like cheerlead each other a bit more, if anything.
Yeah. I mean, I look back to when I took a guy called Tommy Wright's place at Man City. He was probably 33 at the time and I was 19, and he was absolutely brilliant with me. And I'll never forget how he was, always offering me advice. He was in the room with him. He'd take me out doing a bit of coaching on his own in the afternoon just to give me some extra work. And he genuinely wanted to play, but he wanted me to do well as well. And I've always tried to say that to the other goalkeepers, you know, do the right things, because good things happen to good people. And if you do the right things over a period of time, good things will happen to you. And Cammy's he's great when he's playing, and he's great when he's not playing. And obviously, he's really disappointed not to have played the back end of the season. James has come and done really well, and Cammy's been nothing but supportive to James as well. So it's just how it is, because, it's a unique position, and it can be a very lonely position at times as well.
I can imagine.
I bet it has been for him. All right, you touched upon it earlier, and I'd be wasting this opportunity if I didn't ask you. What went off with Lukai, Westwood and Hutchinson? Is the diplomatic answer clash of personalities, or did they have a right to tear-up?
No, there was no tear-up. I think Josh just wanted to go in a different direction. He wanted to use younger players.
It was what he said then? Like, because he came. I think he got asked in the media a few times, didn't he?
Yeah, to be honest... The honest answer is I can't be honest. Well, I can be honest, because I don't actually know, because it was Josh's decision, and he made a decision that he likes the Sam Hutchison and Westy and George Boyd, I think, and Alman Abdi and whatever weren't going to be involved. They was all older players, and he wanted to move in a different direction. And sometimes, listen, as a manager, you've got to make decisions every day. And Josh made a real big decision. And when you make those big decisions, you've got to win games. We didn't start winning games. And everyone's obviously asking what's happening with Westy, what's happening with Sam Hutchison, two fans' favourites. And then it becomes difficult. So every press conference then is sort of... That's the big talking point. And then it becomes difficult. And if you're not winning games and this fans' favourite player's not playing, it becomes difficult for a manager then. So I don't. The actual answer is I don't actually know what went off, but there were certainly no big bust-ups.
I genuinely thought there was like a behind-the-scenes tear-up, because, you know, he got, like you say, in the conferences, he got asked about it a lot. And he just said, look, you know, I want to play younger players and we've got a few old ones. I'm judging everybody on their own merits. And players like Jordan Thornley came into the squad and Matt Penny and players like that. And it just was that. It was just a coaching...
But we had some great results under Yoss. I remember going... to Villa Park and we won 2-1. And Matt Penny played left back and Ash Baker played right back. And they were fantastic. Yeah. And we had some, I remember going to Bristol City and I think Stephen Fletcher came off injured early on. Lucas Rao went on and he scored 2. We won 2. So we had some really good results with him. It just went a bit, little bit sticky towards that Christmas period. But it is, as a manager, you've got to make decisions, huge decisions. And, you know, ultimately, you've got to win games of football. And if you don't win games of football, whatever decisions you make, they seem to be the wrong ones.
Go on, Chaz.
I was just, I've got to, just while we're potentially talking about what may have gone on behind the scenes, and obviously you are not at liberty to discuss, Vasquez, from our timeline, as if he sort of came in, played 8 games or something like that, then apparently was sick and then vanished into thin air. Was that, because again, he seemed to come in as like a Dawson replacement and then just sort of vanished off the face of the earth. Like,
we had, you know, when Cisco came in, he brought in an Italian goalkeeping coach called Antonello Bambrilla, and he wanted to bring his own guy in. They wanted another goalkeeper. They didn't think they had enough there. They brought Devis in and put him straight in the team, which again, I thought was a bit harsh on Cam, because Cam played against Southampton, did okay. And then the week after, Devis played. And then, it was only when Neil Thompson took the Huddersfield game that he put Cammy back in. You know, Cammy did well. And then Cammy obviously started under Danny as well. So, and then Devis, you know, we're living in a foreign country, wasn't, his language was okay, but not fluent. So I would imagine he found it difficult at times, especially when he came out of the team. And he went back to AC Milan in January, and I think he's gone on loan to a team in Serie B or Serie C. So, difficult for Devis. Nice lad, quiet lad. But I worked with him for and he never gave me 1 ounce of trouble. And he came, played a few games and went.
I feel like we tend to just imagine scenarios in our heads, don't we? We pick up on things, fans, and they just kind of oh my God, there must have been a right scandal there. And it turns out it was just a man had a job and then went, like, that was all happening.
Listen, with social media now and the amount of people who speak to different outlets in the press want there to be something there, but there isn't a lot of the times. And sometimes managers just get a feeling for a player and they like him and they don't like another one. And that's what every manager sort of picks a team on.
So let's pick that up the other way then, about players about managers picking players and players picking managers and going the other way. You know, I can't let you go without talking about Chisco Munoz. So what was it? Did he just try to change too much to start? I mean, could you see the cracks appearing? Did the players just not take to this new thing, or was he just a bit
again? I worked for him for a couple of weeks in pre-season, and by the time Lee come around, I'd gone back to the under-21s and under-18s, so I weren't in close quarters. But sometimes managers go to a club and for whatever reason it just doesn't happen. Sometimes managers go to the club and it does happen. But unfortunately for Cisco, again, lovely fella Cisco, like really,
that's
really
sad. Had, so many of the players have said,
very charming man. He had he had a little cheeky grin and always smiling. Like I said before, it's all about winning games, and he obviously didn't. Well, he didn't win any, did he?
We got a League Cup penalty win.
Again, and you're looking back at his tenure, and it was so quick. It was sort of gone before you knew it. So yeah, difficult for him. He obviously had a lot of success at Watford, so he's obviously a good manager. Sometimes it's just every managerial appointment is a risk, isn't it? And that one obviously didn't work out.
Well, there's obviously some big characters in that changing room, and the captain clearly runs the show, and Josh Windass. You get the impression that Barry and Josh are like the clique, and if you don't get on with them, then you're not in the cool kids gang. And like, do you feel like they didn't take to him as well? Or
I don't think anyone didn't take to him. Everyone, he was a popular guy. You know, when he came in, everyone liked him, and for whatever reason, it just didn't work out for him. And like I said, some managers it does and some it doesn't. And for Cisco, unfortunately, it didn't. But if you ask anyone about him as a person, he was a nice guy. And it's difficult because there were games there that we perhaps should have won and we didn't. And then the longer that goes on, the sort of the rumour mill starts and then the pressure mounts and mounts and mounts. And then ultimately, the club make a decision to get rid of a manager. And that's just part and parcel of the game, really. So it's not nice when you see people lose the jobs They've got families, and he brought over his brother who came as a coach, and he got a couple of assistants, and ultimately five people lost the job, and it's not nice. And you know, for the managers who get really well paid, you know, they can probably handle it financially, but you know, some of the other staff perhaps can't, so they're basically, you know, scratching around for another job. So it's not nice to see. And his time was pretty short lived, and it sort of came and went before I suppose he could settle in, really.
Christ. I've got a couple of fans' questions I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to let Charlie ask you all about Danny Rowland, what it's like playing for him, and is he the magic man? So I'll tell you what, this first one here comes from Ben, SWFC15. How talented is Piers Charles? Is he that good?
Yeah.
They are, Ben.
He's really good. I really like him. He's got a great temperament. With the ball at his feet, he's really, really elite. He's as good as anyone I've ever seen at any level, I think. He's so good with the ball at his feet. He's razor sharp round his goal. He's got good hands. He's brave. He'll make big saves. But he's only 18. So, you know, you've got to wait for Pierce. Who knows where his career, you know, what level he'll reach. Because until they start playing week in, week out, you know, you never really know. But, you know, he's made his debut now for Northern Ireland under-21s. I spoke to their manager. He was really delighted with him. I know the staff at Wednesday like him, and you know, I've seen him. I was part of the recruitment drive to get him in when he was 15 when we actually signed him, and you know, I've seen him develop from a young kid into a young man, and someone I've got a lot of time for. Pierce works hard, does all the things right, so yeah, he's got a great chance, but you never really know until they actually go and do it. But yeah, he's very talented, that's for sure.
There was a weird part at that that pre-season friendly against Real Murcia, and Cam and him played a half each, and there was a point when he kind of noticed that Charles hadn't really picked it up, like the ball had gone back or it get back, and he's playing football like he'd got it at his feet. It, you know, if somebody said to me draw a picture of Piers Charles from memory, it would be him with the ball at his feet, like it. And do you get a bit jealous yourself? Do you think, I wish I'd have learned that 20 years ago?
But you didn't need it when I played, because you didn't play like that. But it's a different game now. When you look at someone like, I always said to Pierce, you've got to look at someone like David Rea at Arsenal. One thing, Pierce is not 6'4", he's not 6'5", like James Beadle or Cammy. You know, he is sort of 6'1", but he's exceptional at a lot of things. So yeah, you know, he's a great lad as well, really humble, and he's really, I think his busy biggest asset is his temperament. It'll be interesting, really interesting for me to see, you know, how he develops over the coming years.
So last one from me. We've got Stephen Al 13. How good does he think Beadle is, and could he go to the very top? I mean, we've seen a lot on social media that he's going to be England future number one. I mean, kid's got talent, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And, you know, he sort of reminds me a little bit when I broke in, sort of, you know, big gangly kid, sort of 19 years old, sort of making his way in the game. And
I don't remember you being a big gangly kid. Bloody hell, I mean.
I'm now an old gangly kid.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, so listen, James coming in and he's done really well. It's really difficult to come in and play straight into a struggling team at 19 years of age, and he's done that and he's done it well. So yeah, I think he can be proud of what he's done at Wednesday, and I think he will be a Premier League keeper. He's probably the youngest keeper playing at that level in the country. He plays for England under 20s. He's at Brighton. They think highly of him. So yeah, what the future might hold for him, you know, I'm not sure, because it'll obviously be very difficult to break into the Brighton team. So yeah, maybe it's another loan or whatever. But yeah, he's certainly a talented lad, and you know, I don't think he'll have, you know, if he was available for loan, I don't think there'd be any shortage of admirers or suitors, because yeah, he's a talented boy and he's done really well. So, and at 19, he's only going to get better. So he's gaining more experience all the time. He's learning all the time, and yeah, he's just going to get better and better. So as long as he stays injury free, he's a lovely lad. He's got his feet on the ground as well. So I don't see him sort of, you know, getting carried away with himself as well. So yeah, he's done really well at Wednesday, and lovely lad as well.
He's the epitome of what my nan says about kids filling out. She was always obsessed when I was a teenager, going, oh, he'll be all right when he fills out. Like he is, you know, he does look like a spider on a urinal, doesn't he? You know
what
I mean? So go on, Ed Chaz, let's bring it right up to date. I you know, you've probably got some burgeoning questions about how a man 10 years younger than our guest has managed to win the hearts of half of Sheffield.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Raul, obviously, he came into a struggling team is probably even being too generous. I mean, we were bottom of the championship, historical, terrible start, and everybody's morale must have been through the floor. Where did it all go right? How did he manage it?
Yeah, listen, he came in, and I was up with the first team at the time when he came in, and instantly, everyone liked him. They liked his assistant, Sasha. Brought in Paoli as well. I know Paoli, we played together at Charlton. He brought in Henrik Pedersen and obviously Neil Thompson's up there as well, who I know very well. So instantly, we all liked him and you could see how he wanted to play. He's so sort of sure of what he wants and getting his point across, but he gets his point across. It's the way he wants to play, it's not that complicated. But the way he gets, it's really technical and there's a lot of detail in there, but the way he gets his point across to the players is really simple. Good training, enthusiastic, young, hungry. He spots the tiniest little bit of detail. Like I said earlier, I've never known a manager go into a club and make such an impact, particularly with the fans. They absolutely love him. And Wednesday are lucky to have him. And in my opinion, he's going to go on to be a top, top manager. He's only young. He's only just turned 35, so he's learning all the time. So this is a massive learning curve for him. Mm-hmm. But he's won the hearts of the fans, which is, you know, not to be underestimated. And, you know, he's a lovely fella. The way he speaks to people and his understanding, he's got empathy. But he's really sort of focused and driven in what he wants to do. And everybody sort of jumped straight on board with him because they could see sort of what a special talent he is. And is as impressive as any manager I think I've ever really seen. And you know, he's had a great start to his managerial career. I'm sure there'll be bumps in the road as there is, you know, with every manager. But yeah,
well, we remember Huddersfield last season. That was a pretty significant bump, to be fair.
Yeah, but he's got a great future in front of him. And I don't think you'll ever hear anyone say a bad word about Danny Roll. He's a lovely fella. He's really engaging. He's always got time for you. If you need to chat, knock on his door, you can do. He's one of the good guys and he's got a really bright future. And like I said, I've never seen anyone come in and make such an impact, I don't think.
No,
his song's good as well, isn't it?
His song is brilliant. That does help. It does help. And I think I feel like as Sheffield Wednesday fans we're a bit afraid of like hero worship. Like it's like we're scared of having our hearts broken a bit. So like if we big somebody up too much, like players or managers or whatever. So I think, yes, obviously things were bad, but I think anyone could have come in, and even if they'd have achieved what he achieved in that time, it's clearly more than that, isn't it? And like you said, like it's obvious that the team are so behind him, and I think it's really captured the fans' like love for him. Do you think he'll stay? Do you think we're looking at some long term Danny Roll?
The only thing that surprised me in football is that people are surprised. You never know what's around the corner, but we're lucky to have him. I hope he stays for a long, long time. As all Wednesday fans do. And if he does, then, you know, the future looks bright. And like I said, I can't speak highly enough of him. The people who are close to him, you know, his coaching team, they love him. And the players sort of, you know, hang on every word he says sort of thing. And he gets his message across and he's engaged with the fans. And, you know, he's got something going, hasn't he? And, you know, you can feel the energy when you go to Hillsborough. And it's obviously not always been like that. But yeah, he's just brought an energy and a passion that the fans can relate to. And one thing I will say about him, he works so, so hard. You know, he's up at night watching games and thinking about training for the day after and stuff. And everything he does is really, it's not just come in and do a generic session, or we'll have a bit of keep ball and a five-a-side. Everything's really pinpointed towards the next game. So, yeah, his detail's good, his manner's good. And yeah, he's an all-round nice guy and good manager.
Amazing. That's going to help Charlie sleep tonight.
It's the warmth.
Listen, I'm sorry I've kept you for so long, but I'm going to ask you one more before I go. What's next for Nicky Weaver? Bit of gardening or dole queue, or are you going to look for something else?
No, I don't think I'll ever coach again. You know, I'm struggling with my knee a little bit. I've started to do a bit of media work over at Man City now, which I really enjoy. Just, you know, spend more time with my kids. They're growing up quickly. And you know, certain things make you prioritise other things in your life. And, you know, I've loved my time at Wednesday, absolutely loved it. I'm so, so lucky to have played for the club and worked for the club. And I've sort of never took that for granted because I realised what a lucky lad I am. But everything sort of has come to an end and I've done the coaching now for 10 years. And, it's just time to move on to a different chapter in my life. And it's not as if I'm leaving, you know, to get another job. You know, I think I'm pretty much finished with coaching now. And yeah, I'll be back at Hillsborough as a fan. My lad's in the academy there. He'll be under 12s next season. He's a goalkeeper. So I'll still be kicking around the place and seeing a lot of familiar faces. So yeah, but it's been a great journey for me, from the sort of cop to the pitch to the coaching room, I suppose. And yeah, I've loved every minute of it, and it's a special club. But the thing I'll miss most is the people, because there's some really, really good people at Sheffield Wednesday. And yeah, I wish everybody all the best, because it's a special club to me, and a special club, you know, to a lot of people. And yeah, I just hope that they can, you know, get it going, and one day in the not too distant future be back in the Premier League.
Nicky, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your kind words about Sheffield Wednesday. I truly wish you every success in the future and whatever you decide to do, and especially your young and coming through. And thanks a lot for joining us tonight. See you later.
Been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Every week, live from 8 p.m, it's the Wednesday Week, bringing you football analysis.
We play a night game. He has to turn the floodlights on.
Bringing you banter.
Yeah.
Bringing you self-testimonials.
So I just want to be able to talk as much crap.
The Wednesday Week. 1, 2, 3, 4, live.
Bear in mind, I'm not touching this topic. I'm not touching it.
I'm a little bit older than you.
Like, that zero's gone, that goose egg's gone.
Now with 100% less Blair.
Former child turned current pundit, Blair Hardman.
Blair Hardman, Blair Hardman, Blair Hard Ankles.
Available on all social medias.
Obviously, this goes out on YouTube and as well as all the other social media outlets, podcasts, etc.
The Wednesday Week 24-25 season. Join us next season.
Put on your podcast.
It's the 90th minute. You've got all your mates round. You've got your McNugget share boxes coming down the left wing, ready to go. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Back of the net, Le Bosch. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com for more information. See you later.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.